Welcome to another edition of Trail Runner Nation. I'm Don Freeman.
Andy Jones Wilkins.
Bethany Patterson.
Wait, Bethany Patterson, you're F7.
F7.
Nice. Andy, we were just here a short time ago doing a preview about Western States, and here we are post-Western States. It's Monday.
It is. My gosh, I think I still have my Western States hangover. Might have it for a while.
We don't have Scott Ward here today. He's off working, and we just kind of tried to squeeze this in on your way to the airport. So this is just going to be a quick review, preview, and kind of look at some of the stories that are behind this race. So a lot of things happen. And you were right on many of them, and one of them in particular was there's going to be a surprise out there.
Yeah. I think there's always a surprise in the top 10, but this year there were more than one.
Yes.
And so I think it's one of the things that makes it a great dynamic every year at Western States.
So break it down for us, AJW. You've had a chance to do a preview. You've watched the race unfold, and now in retrospect, what did you see out there?
Well, I'm going to start right out with the men's winner.
Okay.
Andrew Miller.
Yes.
Who won after Jim Walmsley went off course. And Bethany and I got to know Andrew a little bit when he was running the Georgia Death Race, which is how he got into the race. And I'm not sure very many prognosticators picked him to win, a little 20-year-old kid, but he did. And you got to say that's kind of the surprise of the day.
Yeah, how do you come in with just turning 20? He's not that old, and getting up against a field like that with mature veteran runners and on a tough course on a tough day.
I mean, you look at the list of guys that came in behind him, he beat some solid experienced runners.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was kind of behind Walmsley all day, but he ran a solid race. I think I saw something early on, maybe in the first 20 miles, he was like 10th. Mm. It wasn't like he was right up at the front, but he was steady and strong all day and pushed it when he needed to.
So smart. I mean, he's a veteran move right there.
And he always has. At the Georgia Death Race, same thing. I don't know if he was 19 technically at the time or if he was already 20, but people, I think, kind of underestimate him because of his age and expect him to. He races like a veteran.
Hmm.
He races like an experienced 30, 40-year-old runner, and he's only 20.
Yeah.
It was very impressive.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
Another big, it wasn't a surprise to me, but it people just saw it through the day, was what Jeff Browning did.
Mm.
You know, Jeff Browning was as far back as 15th place at Michigan Bluff. There's only 45 miles to go.
Yeah.
And he finished third. And it was just a textbook clinic on how to run a 100-miler.
Right. Yeah. I believe we've had John Nichols on in the past talking about rabbit hunting, you know, collecting the people that have gone out a little too quick. And you said that you predicted on the pre-show that Jeff Browning was going to get out there and pick up some carnage.
And he did.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Good for him.
The other two just in this top 10 were the two guys in seventh and eighth who I'm not sure anybody even heard of, although Chris Mocco had gotten a golden ticket.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Mocco and Kyle Pitari, seventh and eighth, kind of coming from nowhere, running solid.
Very solid. That's 17:01 finish and 17:05 respectively.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah. That's fast. So we can't get too far away from what Jim Walmsley did out there. Let's talk about how fast he was tearing that course up.
It was unreal.
Mm.
He ran splits from Robinson Flat to the river that I'm not sure any of us would even dream of doing in training, much less in the midst of a race. He seemed to be in a absolute zone.
Floating.
Yeah.
The pictures, he's just floating. His feet aren't even on the ground, half the pictures. He looks like he's running a 5K.
Yeah, I saw something that Dominic Grossman put up there. Yep. Maybe you saw that same one. It was in black and white. And he said, this is not a ultra shuffle. And he had that off the ground, perfect stride. He's just rolling. Beautiful to watch.
And I was inspired, and I think many people were, at the end of the race that he finished. You know, that he got his head together after realizing he'd missed a turn. He walked back to the course. He walked it in.
Yeah.
He got a 20th place finish, and he got his silver buckle. And I chatted with him a little bit afterwards. He wants to come back and get it right, and I have a great deal of confidence he probably will.
Well, you know, finishing so important. Now he's finished 100. Now he's in his mind. That's not something that hasn't been done for him, and so that's an important thing to put on your resume, your personal resume. You know, maybe not for others, but knowing in your heart, you know, I've done the 100. I know the distance because you learn from that.
Yeah, and he I think a lot of people talked to him at the awards ceremony and different things, and you know, he handled it. He had a grace about it. You know, he realized it was it happened, and I think he'll learn from it. You know, that's there's always mistakes that can happen, and you never know what's going to happen in a race. And he handled it really well. I think he'll learn from it, and I absolutely think he'll be back and dominate. It was, I mean, up until mile 93 when he got off course, he was dominant. It was impressive.
John Mettinger put a post up there of showing where he went back in the records to look to the fastest times between the splits between aid stations, and he's the fastest one after another.
All
after
of them, I bet.
Yeah, incredible. I'll share that with you. We'll see if we can't post this along with it, because it's really, really good.
48 minutes through Deadwood was the one that blew me away.
Yeah.
Just incredible.
Yeah, if you go there with fresh legs and try to pull that off, not easy to do.
No. And on a decently hot day.
It was. You were out there on the course. Yeah. How hot was it out there?
Well, so it was hot. I was actually hoping for hotter, just because for me personally, the hotter the better for all the people in front of me. And I was hoping for carnage too.
Yeah.
But from what I understand from previous years, it was a little bit hotter. So it was good. I maybe because I have a good coach and I did some heat training, or because the aid station volunteers did such a good job keeping you wet and cool. It didn't feel that hot to me. It was very dry and dusty, but I didn't think it was that hot. But there was a lot of carnage still.
What did your coach have you do with heat training? Because the first thing that went into my mind was, ooh, what did she do?
Yeah.
Will you disclose any of that? Or are those top secrets?
No, I mean, I think it's what people always talk about with heat training out here. I did a little bit of everything. We did get some, you know, I'm from Virginia, so we did get some heat. And we had the humidity, which I actually think when I was running out there, I know I talked to Maggie, who was also in the top 10 and has some humidity, that even when it's hot, it doesn't feel that bad compared to when you have the same situation and you're in heat. So did some runs in the heat. I did the wonderful running in tights and a jacket on a 90 degree day outside and dying. I did the sauna training. I did a little bit of driving in the car without the air conditioning. So kind of whatever, it was a little bit weird this year for us. Normally we get more heat in May and June than we did. It was a little bit cool. So I felt like I was cramming for an exam, but it worked. Mm-hmm. So
good.
I'll do it again.
Yeah. Well, good. Next year.
I'll do it again.
Yeah,
next year.
F7 is a ticket back in.
Yeah, you got to kind of take it.
Are we going to make that official?
can we alter? Can we cut this out?
This is an edit-free podcast.
For the record, I just dropped all the coolers back off at Thornley's house so that we can use them again next year.
Oh, good.
I think you get top 10. You got to take your chance when you can.
Yeah, you got to get in there. It's so tough to get back.
Yes.
Right?
I don't want to have to race my way in like I did this year. So
that's a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
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 Anything else on the men's side, AJW?
I wanted to also just point out Charmin. He admitted that he had kind of a tough day out there, but did it again, seventh consecutive top 10, this time in sixth place.
Wow.
And he'll be back again going for number 8. That was just impressive. The couple of times I saw him, especially at Michigan Bluff, you could tell he was having kind of a lunch pail day, just kind of gutted out, and he did. So neat to see. And a big international contingent once again, you know, second place, fourth place, fifth place. And Jesse Haynes sneaking into number 10. I think both 10s, M10 with Jesse Haynes, been there before, and F10 with Erica Lindland.
Yeah.
Maybe the happiest post-finish celebration of the top 10 was really fun to see.
Yeah, Jesse Haynes coming through. I was there at some of the aid stations. He was coming through, a real fan favorite of everybody, really rooting him on and hoping for the best, and he did it.
He just seems like a hard worker, kind of understated, and just gets it done when he needs to. I like him. I was rooting for him.
Good, good. Yeah. And you predicted Ian Charmin would be just a guy that you ride in. That's like you take the 10 spots and you say, well, there's really only 9 because Ian's going to take one of them. We don't know which one, but let's talk about 9 of them. Good. All right. Well, shall we move on to the women's side?
Let's
okay. Well, we have an obvious mention right here. I mean, we're sitting with F7.
That seems a little bit unreal, actually. I think you're talking about someone else.
I bet that must just feel fantastic.
I don't think it's sunk in yet, has it?
Not a bit.
No.
No. Not a bit. I have the plane ride home to sort of process what's just happened. I'm in a fog. So.
Well, if you listen to the preview, your coach had predicted that you'd be up there in the. In the Fs.
Somewhere in there. We were hoping. But you never know, right? We were joking beforehand, kind of in the months leading up to the race, I looked at the list over and over, and I kept thinking, I don't know how I make it in the top 10 with these people. There was just so many women. And I've learned I don't need to read any of the preview stuff, because all I kept reading was one of the most competitive fields ever, one of the strongest fields, one of the deepest. I was like, oh my gosh, if I wasn't nervous before, I definitely am now. I don't know how I'm going to do this, but you know, 100 miles is a long way. A lot can happen.
So where did you find yourself before we get into the, is it all right if we just talk a little bit about her race and then we'll get into some of your details. So where did you start out in the race? Did you pick some people up? Did you Jeff Browning this race? Or tell us
definitely.
A little bit about your strategy.
I mean, I knew there were so many. Not only was it a deep women's field, it was a fast women's field.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew I had no business being anywhere close to the front for the first. I mean, I was in the high country. I knew I might not feel good with the altitude in the beginning of race. I usually don't. I don't like the beginning of the races. I kind of have to warm up. So my whole plan was to be very conservative, to actually not even, so going up the escarpment, the first climb, I didn't even look at how many women were ahead of me. Mm. I ignored it. I just ran what I normally run. We had in our crew meeting before the race, we'd sort of talked about, don't even tell me where I am in the standings before like halfway, because it doesn't matter.
Right.
And I don't want to be thinking about that. I don't want to try to race and have that in my head that I'm trying to catch people. So really the first 30, definitely, I was just kind of running easy and taking it easy. And then as the day went on, it was interesting to me kind of coming from the back of the pack, how early the carnage started.
Mm.
When I started seeing reports of people having issues and cramping and stomach issues. And so sort of, I think, looking back at the Twitter feed, I could see my progression up through the field, I think, towards the second half of the race. And then I kind of just stayed like 9th, 10th, 7th, 8th, something towards the end. But it was a progression.
Yeah, when you get into that spot, you can count who you're passing and who might be passing you, so you can get a sense.
Yes.
Unless somebody steps off the trail to use a restroom or something, and then you can be misled about your placement.
Yeah, I had one time where I thought I was in 10th and I was actually 11th, which was okay. It was like at middle of the race, so it didn't really matter.
That was her coach's fault.
I wasn't going
to
say that.
I lost count, and I had to, at the bottom of Bath Road, had to say, you were actually 11th back there.
But now you're 10th.
But now you're 10th.
So now you can actually get excited and run for your life.
You said carnage started early. How early? What mile?
The first time I saw my crew was mile 23. Mm. And I hadn't seen. So basically there was 20th, 15th?
20th.
So there was like a good 15 women ahead of me. And I was running pretty much with Maggie Guterl and Erica.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But the three of us were around each other and we saw no other women for the first 30 miles. But my crew had said, you know, just be patient. We're starting to see people come in and complaining of cramping and different things. And then definitely by Dusty Corners at mile 38, people were already having issues. I mean, surprisingly, and it was really sad with having Magda drop early. So that was kind of an unexpected thing. And I felt really bad for her.
Yeah.
And then definitely by Michigan Bluff, people were just
mile 55.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Falling apart. I came into Michigan Bluff and there was women like that had been there for 20 minutes, 40 minutes, that had been obviously like very far ahead of me that were still there trying to regroup. So
yeah,
it was definitely a day of carnage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I felt bad for Eliza LaPierre as well, who's
has
a real good resume here at Western States and got her electrolytes out of whack a little bit and had some
asthma problems. Mm. It was really dry and dusty there.
Yeah,
I think a lot of people had problems with the breathing and the dust and stuff. So she had a rough day. That was, I was rooting for Eliza.
Yeah, and she's not a complainer either.
I
had a chance to spend some time talking to her mom at Bath Road who was waiting for her she comes from good people. She's a good strong lady.
Well, I think even after she was having problems, she still went on a fair ways before calling it a day, which is so impressive.
Well, there comes a point when you're a competitive runner, and you guys can both speak to this, is that you don't want to dig too deep into the reserves because you could break yourself for the rest of the season or forever if you're not careful. And so finishing for some is one goal, and not breaking yourself is an important goal too.
Because you know it's easy to get caught up in the hype, and it is Western States, and you want to finish. But in the whole concept of your life, it's one race and it's one day.
Yeah.
So you do have to decide it's hard as ultra runners because our whole mentality is push through and finish no matter what. Yeah,
all the great stories come from
you know I death marched, it wasn't my best day, but I battled through. But then on the flip side is you do have it is your body. You only have one body.
Right.
And you want to live to fight another day sometimes. So and I saw a lot of that out there.
Yeah. One of the things I was most impressed with Bethany's performance, just observing it as a coach and a crew and then being on the last 22 miles as a pacer, is the way in which she was able to remain calm.
Hmm.
You know, this was there was a pretty high stakes for her. 12 years since she'd been here before with a rather unfortunate DNF back then. A big buildup to get the spot at GDR and then, you know, build up her training here. And it's easy. It's much easier to get caught up in the exuberance of the day and staying calm. We chatted a little bit with Megan Arbogast, who finished one spot ahead of Bethany on Saturday, and talked a lot about that calmness. And, you know, you look down this list of top teners and you see some calm people, you see some composure, you see some poise. And I think I've talked about this on the show a lot before, particularly after mile 70. And I think you felt this yesterday. So much of what you're doing is in your head.
Mm.
You know, by that point, you know what your legs can do and what they can't do. We realized, okay, quads, we've got that worked out. Bethany's not going to trash her quads. Her feet are holding together. Her stomach are the same as everybody else's stomach at this point.
Yeah.
It's going to be what she does with her head.
Yeah.
And you know, staying calm, staying relaxed, taking a couple extra minutes if you had to, either at the aid station or more importantly on some of those climbs where you're walking and getting your stuff together. It's really an impressive performance. First time out at Western States for 12 years, and I saw a lot of that in the top 10.
Hmm.
Oh, definitely, mm-hmm. definitely.
What kind of pacer is AJW?
probably how you would imagine. Early on in the day, like I said, I was running with Maggie and Erica. And Erica, I think this was her fifth finish. So, Erica, this was her fifth finish. So she knows the course pretty well. And so in the high country, she was sort of describing the course and things that she thought I would like. And I said, actually, I don't want to listen to this because I know in the last 20 miles, I'm going to get a running commentary of every rock and tree that's on this trail. But he actually behaved himself. It was more just talking when I sort of needed to understand, like to wrap my head around, okay, we have 10 minutes to this aid station, or you're going to have this climb. You're not going to like it. Let's just do this and that. So it was a good dynamic, I think.
If I could comment on it, I had to work hard to remind myself I wasn't racing.
Yeah.
I think that might be not surprising to people listening that, you know, I love this race so much and have such a history here.
Yeah. And this was your first time pacing.
And it was my first time ever pacing at
Western States.
Huh. But very quickly, without necessarily any words between us, it was made clear that it was not my race.
I don't think
she ran in front, uh-huh. which is where she always runs when we're in training, and we train a lot together.
Uh-huh.
You know, there was not a whole lot of, you know, encouraging words or cheerleading.
She didn't need that.
I was virtually, hey, maybe we should run this.
Right.
You know, when she decided to walk, it's kind of like time I would have suggested she walk.
Right.
You know, when we were thinking about what nutrition she might take at the next aid station, it was like, that's the kind she would pick to take. So it was a really good dynamic there. And I think we realized as we were in the mix and sort of settling into this seventh, eighth place,
mm-hmm.
that it became hers. And I don't do this very often. I felt a certain amount of comfort kind of in the background.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and before the race, we had also talked different scenarios on, if it had been a rough day, maybe my stomach had gone south, it might have been more of a cheerleading kind of him letting my brain go and just following my pacer and letting them kind of think for me. But I had another pacer from Forest Hill to the river. And it was clear I was, my brain was still okay. I was in a good spot, so he didn't have to do that. But we had discussed, you know, there's your pacer can serve many purposes, and sometimes it's just to be there and to kind of get you through. And other times it is more of a you really need to help your runner survive whatever they're dealing with. And thankfully, it wasn't that situation. It was pretty good.
Yeah, Pacers need to be adaptive
very
to
much
whatever's happening.
And to that day.
Yeah.
And it may change in the progression of their time as your Pacer.
Between aid stations.
Very much so.
For sure.
Let's get into the ladies' side. Let's start and walk through it like we did the men's side. And great to hear your story, Bethany. That's fun.
Bethany, why don't you start with Casey? Because you guys had...
Yeah. Well, it was neat. I mean, I'd never met Casey before coming out here, but I think with everyone else have kind of followed her, and it just seemed, you know, this was her third time in the race, and she went from sixth to second last year, and just personally as an observer, and I think other people would agree, it just seemed like this was her year. Mm. That all of her racing up to this point, she'd raced different races and run them better or faster than she had before, and just seemed to have no injuries. She seemed to run with joy, and I met her the day before when she had done her check-in and talked to her a little bit and told her I was rooting for her. And she just, I mean, obviously I never saw her in the race because she was way ahead of me, but from what everyone said, she ran happy and she ran calm, and I think even though she was in the front, I don't think she was racing the other women. It seemed like she was running her race, and it just it sounds like it'll be interesting to see how she would describe it, but it sounds like a magical day for her. Even crossing the river, she's smiling and just sort of taking it in, and it was really impressive. I think she's a good ambassador and a good champion of this race.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She does the race justice, and you can tell she has a love and a respect for it.
Mm-hmm. I saw her come in through a couple of the aid stations and running effortlessly, just like you're talking,
floating.
It looks easy for her.
Yeah,
and she comes in with joy and exchanges, you know, greets people and gets her bottles filled or whatever she was using.
Although I think she always doesn't. She always look good and effortless in races. Well, seems like always with a smile and happy and sweet.
Well, yeah, and she just springs up those hills.
Yeah,
and you know, I told her when she crossed the line in 2015 that I was rooting for her to win this year, and. And she never forgot that. She's been sweet and nice to me for a long, long time. And I've kind of had really high hopes for her. And, you know, we'll kind of nudge her along, you know, a couple times a month. And it was just so neat to see. I also think I want to say, I mean, yes, maybe the most competitive women's field. She ran only the third woman to run under 18 hours.
Wow.
Okay. On a day.
Exactly.
And the other two, you know, they're named Ellie Greenwood and Ann Trason. So that's pretty heady company.
Yes, it is.
And then you couldn't sneak into this top 10. There are some names people may not recognize here, but whether it's Amy Sprosten finishing her fourth, the first time going under 19 hours, yep. Devin Yanko, after some years away from running hundreds, ran a great Javelina in October, came back from a real down spell in this race at Dusty Corners.
She was impressive.
Mm-hmm.
She battled her way back. I mean, it sounded like she was having a rough time early, and yet really she was really close to Amy a lot of the time. So, you know, in a competitive race when I'm sure she had aspirations of doing very well, how do you dig yourself out from that dark spot? And she did it. It was really impressive.
And that was at Dusty that you're talking about, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
She'd run out of water.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it's so early in the race and you think my race is already done.
Mm.
And yet she kept it together and she didn't freak out and she worked her way back up, and that it was very impressive.
Yeah, I was there at Dusty when she came through, and I thought, oh, not good. And then she just turned it around, which is so inspiring for the rest of us who at a third of the way through the race may have that same feeling, knowing that mm-hmm. this thing can turn around. There's a lot of racing left today.
Exactly. It's one thing if that happens at mile 70 and you know you can just gut it out for 30, but that happens in the first half of the race and you know you still have to go through the canyons and she's already run out of water. That's a hard thing to not let that get to your head, and it sounds like she kept her mind together.
Yes, she did.
Yeah.
With the exception of Casey,
yeah.
Race of the day was Amanda Basham in fourth place.
Mm-hmm.
I know how Bethany runs and how well she runs. They arrived at the river together. You know, and Bethany did a 250 Cal Street split. That's no slouch, and that 250 Cal Street split got her up to Amanda. Amanda had been about 6-7 minutes ahead
we
of Forest
Hill. We yo-yoed a little bit in that section.
Yo-yoed back and forth on the rollers and going down to Sandy Bottom. And then Amanda proceeded to put, you know, 29 minutes on Bethany from the river to the finish. That's you know, and she put 29 minutes on a lot of people.
And this was her first 100.
And her first 100.
Ooh.
And a 2011. And, you know, Zach Miller was pacing her, apparently doing the cheerleader thing.
Mm-hmm.
And just a solid, impressive effort from her.
Hmm.
I was impressed. When I passed her, she looked pretty steady, but she didn't look like she was just... I mean, I don't know. Maybe she was just in a low. Maybe I was the motivation she needed to speed up a little bit. But I was impressed. I passed her thinking, okay, I can maybe hold her off. And not 3 minutes later, she comes flying by me. And that was like the last time I saw her. I was very impressed. Mm-hmm. She finished really, really strong. And to me, you know, if you've never, I think she did 100K to get into this one.
Mm-hmm.
That's a long way from 100K to go to 100 miles and to be able to stay strong. And not only did she finish, I mean, she moved up, I think. I mean, that it's just incredible.
Oh, she passed.
She was in seventh at that point. So
yeah,
she passed into
fourth place with a mile to go.
Yeah.
Wow. And the fifth place finisher, Alyssa Saint Laurent, who everybody overlooked going into the race except for Ellie Greenwood.
I did not overlook her. No, she was on my radar. And she was steady and strong all day. And held it together. And yeah, I was really impressed with Amanda. I people may not understand just looking at the results. We were in the midst of it to see how it played out, and it was impressive. She did really good.
Talk about Megan's race.
Man, oh man, good old Megan. It was so, and I hope Megan doesn't take any offense to this, but
Megan Arbogast.
Yes, to Megan Arbogast. Mm-hmm. So you know, my husband follows the sport a little bit, but he's not an ultra runner. And I talked to him yesterday after the race, just kind of giving him a summary, and he goes, "Well, all day I kept looking and I was trying to figure out how this 55-year-old woman was beating you." And I said, "Well, this is no just ordinary 55-year-old woman." Let's put that out there. But it sounds like she just ran a steady, smart, strong race the whole day. You know, I mean, really, you know, it was her 10th finish. She probably could have just decided to hopefully get top 10. But towards the end of it, no. I mean, she finished sixth and was just steady. My goal all day was to try to stay behind her. I know she runs a smart, steady race. And but then I was trying to catch her, and I never seemed to be able to put any time on her. She finished well.
And she runs smart. I mean, my advice to Bethany was, if you're in the area around Megan, you're going
to her.
Stick to her. She's going to walk in the right places. She's going to eat in the right places. She's going to soak her head in the right places. I mean, she's a master. And she got her 10th finish. We have, by inside information, we know she's not going to stop at 10. She's going to keep on going.
Well, why should she?
How do you stop with that finish? I mean, that's pretty impressive. Yeah.
And speed, and even the shorter distances. I mean, she weighed a cool 50K
exactly.
A couple years back, is out there just blazing that course. And so she's a great, great runner, great athlete.
And the tough thing this year about the women's race with having so many good people is, there was no guarantee when I finally got into 10th, and then I sort of went from 10th to 8th really quickly. I came into Cal 2 aid station, and there was two women sitting there. So I was all of a sudden in 8th. But then Jody Adams-Moore was one of the ladies sitting in the chair, and she looked kind of rough. But then she came into the next aid station right behind me, so she must have bounced back. And then I knew I had Erica and Maggie and a couple other people. Sally was back there. There were so many tough women that know how to close. So
right.
Even in seventh and eighth place, you couldn't get comfortable.
Know how to close.
Even in the last mile,
well,
we
absolutely.
Were not comfortable.
I mean, now, this is the thing. Bethany's a notoriously good closer, you know, from all of our races back in Virginia. But this is no, you know, race back in Virginia. And there's a lot of runnable stuff, which admittedly is not necessarily Bethany's strength. She would rather have stuff more technical, would rather have ups that are clearly walking, you know, and down.
For everyone.
Right, for everyone.
Not just for me.
And downs that are clearly, you know, hammering. And the closers behind her, Maggie Guterl in eighth, Jody Adams-Moore in 10th, Erica Lindland Jody in 9th, Erica in 10th, and Sally in 11th, were all just like making you run scared. And, we wanted to not be looking over our shoulder.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of running right there and a lot of runners right there.
Yeah.
And like I said, you're not going to sneak into that top 10.
Well, and women that I knew had been running smart all day because I'd been running with them. So, you know, once you get a little bit ahead, you never know. Are they going to make their move? Did I make my move earlier? And they're going to make their move at the end. So it was never comfortable, which I guess, you know what, you're running in the top 10. That's kind of the way you have to do it.
And you never know when someone's going to all of a sudden pick up that next second wind, right?
Exactly.
Or all of a sudden they're starting to do things that are superhuman. You're not supposed to be able to run that
like
fast.
Like Amanda Basham.
Right.
Who just laid down the hammer. You know, I was waiting for another one of those to just, you know, maybe they got their late second wind and they're doing 8 minute miles at the end. You never know.
And the lights are all the same color behind you. It's not like a blue light and a pink light. Yes. You don't know who's chasing
you. I was wishing when he's talking loud in the middle of the night with our headlamps on, and I'm thinking they can probably hear us. Let's. I don't want those women either in front of us or behind us to get motivation.
Yeah.
She's basically telling me to shut up.
Well, all they had to know is that you were pacing her. Like, that sounds very much like AJW.
Exactly. Well, and I talked to Megan Arbogast after the race, and so she was ahead of me, uh-huh. and she actually said that they'd see some headlamps, and she'd hear the talking, and she goes, "Oh, we're okay. That's not AJW." Because they know each other a little bit. She goes, "I know that's not his voice. We're good."
Okay, how about some other just stories that are in and around the race that just are as interesting as the leaders themselves? Do you have any takeaways?
Brian Morrison.
Mm, let's talk about that.
You can talk about that.
In 2006, a highly publicized collapse on the track.
Mm-hmm.
A decade-long battle with that in his mind more than his body. He hasn't stopped running, but mm-hmm. he got married, started a family, lives his life. Returned to 100-mile running at the Cascade Crest 100 in August of 2015. And in a wonderful gesture of, I think, kindness and sportsmanship, the one special consideration entry the Western States Board gave this year was to Brian.
Mm.
And I don't know if he did this, but I'm sure he said to them, "I'm going to get this done."
Yeah.
And in a remarkable moment at the pre-race briefing, he was called up and inspired to kind of get the job done, and he did. I finished 25 hours and change, or 26 hours and change,
somewhere in there,
to a standing ovation at Placer High School track.
Well, at the pre-race meeting, when you're talking about they brought him up, he got the biggest applause. Pretty much the biggest applause of anyone that they were introducing. It was, you could just tell everyone in that room wanted him to finish.
Yeah.
And it was a really neat thing. And it was a neat thing to see that he did it.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's good.
You know, there's a strong sense of history at the Western States 100, and it's valued. And that's another one of the big stories. You know, Wally Heseltine was going to become the oldest finisher and didn't make it by 1 minute. Or 1 minute plus, and I was down on the track, and we're getting ready. Oh, sorry, 1 minute and 55 seconds was his unofficial finishing time. Craig Thornley came over to me as there's the energy and getting ready for the golden hour, and
right.
he said, "Well, Wally went through Highway 49 at 9:15, so that's an hour and 45 minutes to go that 6.5 miles, you know, and." You know, Walmsley, well, not maybe a bad example. Andrew Miller probably did that about an hour, hour and five. Mm. You know, Bethany did it in an hour and 25. Hour and 45 for a 72-year-old gentleman is going to be a stretch, but he was on the bubble.
In the hot second day, because it was hot.
Right.
I remember watching everyone come in and thinking, oh, I can't imagine how hard that would be. You've been out there on your feet for that long without sleep, and then you're just getting pounded by the heat trying to make it under that 30 hours. It's pretty impressive to watch.
Yeah, plus you have 90-plus miles on your
exactly.
legs already.
Exactly.
Yeah, wow. So the electricity built. Everybody had memories of Gunhild Swanson's finish last year.
It looked familiar to that on the video.
It was extraordinary.
With the crowd gathering and just embracing the moment.
The difference was Wally was not really able to keep himself erect. And you could see Craig and his team kind of keeping their eye on things, knowing the world is watching. And Wally is such a class act, mm-hmm. and has an extraordinary support network from his runners in the Mount Diablo group in the East Bay and the Bay Area. And I gave Susie Lister a big hug after this whole thing ended, and she was just so emotional about it. And an 8-time Western States finisher herself, just kind of Wally's biggest cheerleader, and yet he entered the track and he was listing to the right, mm-hmm. and he stumbled into the bushes.
Mm.
And at this point he had about a minute, and I mean, he would have had to run an 8-minute mile pace for 250 meters. And he made it around the track. There was chants of Wally coming from the stands. There was an electricity in the place. After laying down and getting a Coke, he was up on his feet in 15 minutes and going to his car. And, you know, the drama was over, but it was quite something. Even though lightning didn't strike twice, it was a wonderful thing to see.
very inspiring for runners out there, for just for the sport in itself. These stories are bigger than you can tell. You just have to have experienced it. Look at the characters, the character of the people, and their determination.
Yeah, it's so. And their crews coming in. It was I think AJW has said this before, but as the time gets closer to the cutoff, the crew and crowd gets bigger with each runner. So you're trying to look and see who the actual runner is. There's so many, and it's really neat to watch everyone come in with their kids, their family, the people that have been with them the whole time. It is very inspiring. It's definitely worth, you know, if someone comes out, if you're doing this race, stick around, because it is really, really neat to see.
A bigger crowd for the first place finisher or the golden hour last place?
Golden hour by far.
Yeah. Every time.
You could not find a place to park all the way up into the neighborhoods around Plaster High School. I mean, the word is out. The place to be on Sunday morning,
absolutely,
fourth Sunday in June, is Plaster High School track.
So, hey, but before we close, because you've got to jump on a plane, let's do a quick prediction about Hard Rock, because I know that's coming up, and I know you've had a chance to study the entry list for that race since you're involved in it, AJW, and I'd like to hear what you think. What's going to happen at Hard Rock this year?
What about Mr. Jeff Browning now that he has to turn around and run again?
We talked about that on the last podcast. Mm-hmm. We said, do you race the first one? Well, obviously he raced the first one, didn't he?
You kind of have to.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, you've got to look at the two international runners at the front of the pack, Killian Jornet and Xavier Thévenard, as, you know, two guys who are going to battle it out. And then you're going to have Jeff, you know, close behind. I think he'll recover fine from this. I mean, I think
he raced it smart.
He probably won't do much except maybe go to altitude. Mm-hmm. But I'd have to think about those three. And then on the women's side, you've got, you know, Anna Frost is back out there. She's working hard. And chasing her down, assuming she gets off the wait list, which
she
I'm pretty
in.
Sure she's going to, is Darcy PQ.
Ooh, yeah.
Who's training like she's in the race and could make some noise out there as well. As for me,
yes,
because I want to ask Bethany one more question. It's a little bit of a mystery. I've lost a lot of weight. I feel like a new person with my hip resurfaced. I think I can handle the altitude in the hills, but I'm also going a little bit into uncharted territory, and gained inspiration from a lot of what I saw this weekend. But
that would be my question to you, and I wanted to ask that, and so I'd like you to elaborate on that. What kind of motivation and excitement do you get from coming off a race like this, going into your own race? Because I think if Ultra Sign Up had a booth out there, we'd all be racing over there to sign up for the next race. You just get excited about the sport.
Well, yeah. The first thing I need to do is calm down. Bethany's a lot more calmer than me today, but
I'm just tired.
Yeah.
She's F7.
Remember how I said people had to tell me it wasn't my race?
Yeah.
You know, I'm feeling the top 10 euphoria without actually having to run a top 10 race.
Hey, that's a good way to do it. You just get to eat and have a good day and yeah.
So I need to regroup. I actually things are a little bit complicated in my life. I need to return, finish an old job, start a new job. So I'm going to have some distraction literally in the next 5 days, kind of put some pieces into place in my life, and then head out to Colorado, you know, 2 weeks from now, get a week out there and run the race. But the inspiration I get, I mean, come on, I get inspiration from Western States just thinking about it.
Right.
On the lottery day, for goodness sake, I get inspiration about it. But this year especially, I mean, starting with what Walmsley attempted to do, and Casey and Andrew at the front, and Bethany and Wally and Morrison, and the countless stories we were talking, every person circling that track, whether it's 16 hours or 29, has a story, has lived that life in a day.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of need to get that together first in my head. But I am feeling a certain amount of cautious confidence, I think, going into Hard Rock.
Good, good. So you're one of the luckiest guys on the planet right now.
You know what? When I get to spend the summer, you know, with a week in Squaw and Auburn, and then a week in Silverton, yeah, I'm a lucky guy. But let me shift gears, Don.
Yeah.
Because I want to circle back to Bethany for a second. Because,
please.
You know, I did write this article about a year and a half ago, where Bethany had just come off a really good race at Mountain Masochist, and I admittedly, and without, hadn't met her before, had followed her for years when she was Bethany Hunter in her quote-unquote first career, that part of that first career was a 2004 DNF year. And I mean, I didn't ask permission to this, but I kind of projected onto her at the time, you know, don't you want to go back to Western States and kind of right the wrong? And I don't think at the time she viewed it as a wrong, but you did have some regret in a career, in a career, ultra running career with very little failure, frankly, with very little even adversity. How does it feel now? I know you said it hasn't sunk in, but how does it feel now if you just pause and think?
Yeah. Well, I mean, coming from that, and it's sort of been a whirlwind from kind of, so I put in for the lottery in December and with my one ticket and didn't get it. And then going through from January to now, sort of racing my way in and then having to figure out how to train for this thing in a couple months. And, you know, we had talked about this today, but, you know, everybody that comes into the race and having in my position, I had hopes of a top 10, my training had gone well. And, but so do all the other women that are coming in, and, it's 100 miles and you're never guaranteed a good day. And there's always unknowns. I haven't run a 100-mile race in 10 years. So I felt a little bit like a newbie, even though I've been an ultra runner for 16 years or so in the 100-mile distance, it was uncharted territory for me. And, so you have hopes, you have your A goal, your B goal, and your C goal. And I knew no matter what that I wanted to finish this race and get a buckle and kind of sort of like a, not as dramatic as Brian Morrison, but put that to bed and get the finish and kind of get past. I dropped at Michigan Bluff when I came here last time. So to get over that barrier, and my main mentality coming here was to, what I didn't do before was I focused on racing and I didn't take it in and I didn't appreciate it for what it was. And so not so much at the end when you're tired and not taking it in, but in the high country in the whole first half of the race, I just looked around and I enjoyed it. And I tried to remember that it is a gift and it is a privilege, no matter how your race turns out, whether it's what you expected or not, it's a privilege to be able to do this. And I wasn't guaranteed next year. So I wanted to take it in, and it could not, I couldn't have asked for a better day out here. It's what you hope for, and you can't make it happen. It's some days are better than others. Some races are better than others, but it was a perfect day in a perfect place. I had the best crew ever, and I, who can complain about F7?
No one.
I'm certainly not. So.
And you described the great scenery, but also earlier you spoke about your competition being just great athletes, great people of moral character. You just seem to have some camaraderie with colleagues,
I mean,
if you will.
Yeah, you know, some of them I'd met, some of them I hadn't. You know, some I follow from a distance and have just respect for them as athletes and people. And, you know, everyone comes in with their story and where they are in their lives. And to come in and execute on that day, I obviously was not racing to win. Casey's in a different league. And so I have just great respect for what they're able to do. And you definitely, this was my first time here in the arena of Western States since 2004. And you do get sucked into this aura that's out here. Mm-hmm. And I think everyone else feels it. You see it from the other athletes. There's just a different level of passion, and there's something in the history of the race. You see it from, I was telling Andy, just I came in on Wednesday, and so I had a couple days to take it in, and from the board and the volunteers that have been here for 30 years and Tim Tweetmeyer, and you just get the sense of the love that the people have for this race and the trail and the history there, and it gets to you. It's an impressive thing. So I'm honored that I get to be a part of it now.
Yeah, we'll see you in Squaw.
See you in Squaw. Yes.
You started that, didn't JJW? # see you in Squaw.
See you in Squaw.
I've seen see you in Silverton. I've seen all kinds of things now.
Yeah, I heard you need like to get a tattoo of it or something.
At least trademark it. You can retire. You don't need a new job, AJW. You've got see you in Squaw.
That's right.
Well, you'll be in Squaw next year at this time.
Yes.
And or a few days before this. It'll be fantastic to watch you next year and enjoy the next journey.
It'll be wonderful.
You going to get a new coach?
I don't know. We'll see. I may have to trade up. I'm not sure.
AJW, have a great race in Silverton. My goodness, we're going to be following that.
Don, thank you so much. And Bethany, thank you for letting me go along for the ride this year.
Thanks for taking along
wasn't
with
me. Even though it wasn't my race.
Yeah. Remember that.
So go out and run.
Mas.